Good afternoon, and welcome to the New York State Sensation Center Collaborative Conference Call. All lines will be muted. If you have a question, you may press 0 and then 1 on your telephone keypad. You will be able to ask your question in the order it was received. On behalf of the New York State Sensation Center Collaborative, I'd like to turn the call over now to Annie Beigel. Annie?
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Annie Beigel, Manager of Cessation Programs for the New York State Department of Health Tobacco Control Program. And on behalf of the New York State Cessation Center Collaborative, the New York State Department of Health Tobacco Control Program, and the New York State Smokers Quit Line, I'd like to welcome you to today's conference call, Who is Smoking in New York State? And Effective Methods to Help Them Quit, with our featured speaker, Dr. Matthew Farrelly, Chief Scientist for the Public Health Policy Research Program at Research Triangle International, and Paula Celestino, Project Director for the New York State Smokers Quit Line, will be providing the characteristics of quit line callers. Ms. Celestino is standing in for Ms. Abrams today, as she was unable to be here. Today's call will provide a clear profile of who's smoking in New York State. We'll discuss the driving forces that propel smokers to quit and the key role that you, the healthcare clinician, plays in the quitting process of your patients. But before we begin today's call, I have some continuing education logistics that I need to cover. The faculty disclosure statement. Ciccatelli Associates Incorporated is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This activity is accredited for a maximum of one AMA PRA Category 1 credit. Physicians should only claim credit commensurate with the extent of their participation in the activity. The ACCME requires that faculty participating in a CME activity disclose to the audience any relationship with a pharmaceutical or medical equipment company which might pose a conflict of interest. Dr. Farrelly has no real or perceived vested interests related to this presentation, nor does he have any relationships with pharmaceutical companies, biomedical device manufacturers, or other corporations whose products or services are related to pertinent therapeutic areas. There are no commercial supporters of this activity. KSAC, nursing contact hours, pharmacy credits, and certificates of attendance are also available for this activity today. To obtain continuing education credit, please complete the verification of attendance and evaluation forms sent by email and are also available on the New York State Smokers Quit Line website. And only pharmacists need to complete the post-test attached to these forms and follow instructions on the forms for submission. We must receive all continuing education applications within 2 weeks of today's call. Certificates will be mailed 6 to 8 weeks following the program. And now it's my sincere pleasure to turn this call over to Dr. Matthew Farrelly. Dr. Farrelly?
Thanks, Annie. And one small correction, I'm at RTI International, not Research Triangle International. I'll start off with an overview of the presentation. I'm the director of the independent evaluation of the New York Tobacco Control Program, and in that role, we collect a lot of information about tobacco use in New York State. And from extensive surveys that we've done in previous years, I'll be summarizing information about who is the most likely to smoke, who is most likely to quit, and quit successfully, and also review what the evidence-based strategies are to help smokers quit. As Annie noted, I don't have any financial relationships to disclose, and I believe the objectives of the presentation were sent in a separate attachment. So, starting off with information about who smokes in New York, the first slide provides information on smoking prevalence by gender in New York State. And you can see that there is a small difference between men and women in the prevalence of smoking. About 16% of women smoke currently and 18% for men. And therefore, the split in terms of the overall population of smokers is about 50-50, male-female. Going to the next slide, we look at smoking cessation by gender, and there too, the picture is pretty similar for men and women. About 48% of men and women made at least one quit attempt in the past year. This is among current smokers. And of those who quit, about 22-23% were able to maintain that quit attempt for at least 6 months, so stay quit for a period of 6 months or longer. Switching to smoking information by age, you see much more differences. First, looking at smoking prevalence, those are shown in the red bars. Smoking prevalence is highest among 18 to 24-year-olds at 23%, and then this drops steadily with age, about 20% among those 25 to 39, 17% among those 40 to 64, and approximately 8% among those 65 and older. Looking at this in terms of all smokers, which group constitutes the greatest number or fraction of all smokers, and that's the group, the age 40 to 64, followed by the age group 25 to 39. So those 18 to 24 and 65 represent a relatively small fraction of all the smokers in New York State. Turning to quitting smoking cessation by age, we also see a pattern that differs considerably by age. Starting with the prevalence of making a quit attempt in the past year, that's not very different across age groups. It hovers between 46 and 48% in terms of making a quit attempt in the past year. However, those that are able to quit and stay quit for at least 6 months, which is really an indicator of being successful in your quit attempt, that varies pretty dramatically by age, with a low of 16% among 18 to 24-year-olds and increasing up to 40% among those 65 and older. And this is a pattern that's not only true in New York. I've seen this elsewhere in national statistics as well. Switching to race ethnicity, in the next slide, we look at smoking prevalence first, and we present information on smoking prevalence among Hispanics, white, African Americans, Asians, American Indian, Native Alaskans, and Native Hawaiians or Pacific Islanders. And so first, with smoking prevalence among whites, African Americans, and Hispanics or Latinos, it hovers around 17%. It's much lower among Asian Americans at 8%, considered a bit higher among American Indians at 22%, and among Native Hawaiians at around 22%. However, because of the demographics in New York State, whites represent 2/3 of all smokers in the state, followed by about 15% each in Hispanics and African Americans, and Asians, American Indians, and Native Hawaiians represent a pretty small fraction of the overall smoking population in New York State. Turning to the next slide, looking at cessation information by race ethnicity, we do find some differences in terms of the prevalence of making a quit attempt in the past year among smokers. With the highest rates among African Americans at 56% and the lowest among Asian Americans at 42%. About 45% of whites that made a quit attempt, white smokers that made a quit attempt in the past year. About 54% among Hispanics, 53% among American Indians, and 56% among Native Hawaiians. Turning to the next set of demographic information, looking at smoking prevalence by location, we see that among those who live in urban centers in a metropolitan statistical area, either in the city center or outside the city center, but still within a metropolitan statistical area, the smoking prevalence is about 16-17%, but in rural areas outside the metropolitan area, the smoking prevalence is much higher at 24%. But in terms of the overall population of smokers, given the population density of city centers and metropolitan areas, most of the smokers are found in the urban areas, with 12% of all of the smokers in New York State falling in more rural areas outside the city centers. Next, looking at cessation by the same groupings, making a quit attempt in the past year varies somewhat by location. 50% among those in this very city center, 46% among those in the metropolitan area, but not right in the city center, and then 43% in those in rural areas. But in terms of maintaining a quit attempt for at least 6 months, there are some differences, with a low of 16% among those in more rural areas, 27% in the metropolitan statistical area outside the city center, and 21% among those in the city center. Turning to smoking behaviors by education level, we find a pretty dramatic pattern here. Looking at smoking prevalence first, those that have less than high school education smoke at 27%, and this drops pretty steadily as education level increases, down to 9% with those postgraduate training and 13% with those with college degrees. And then also, those with lower education, either high school or less than high school, combined represent over half of all of the smokers in New York State. We also see a pretty dramatic pattern with being able to successfully quit by education level, with a low, although overall the prevalence of making a quit attempt doesn't vary that dramatically. It is, 50% among those with less than high school degree, and then those with postgraduate, it's as high as 55%. But what's more of a consistent pattern is that only 15% of smokers with less than high school degree have been able to quit for more than 6 months, and that steadily increases and up to 34% of those with graduate training. So very strong influence there. And turning to the next slide, with looking at smoking prevalence by insurance status, not surprisingly, given the other demographic characteristics, you see that smoking prevalence is much higher for those with who are covered by Medicaid or have no insurance. Medicaid recipients, the smoking prevalence is about 31%, and it's 27% among those with no health insurance. And then for Medicare, it's around 11%, but that's not surprising because that's an older population and their smoking rate is much lower. And then it's 14% among those with private insurance. And then looking at the yellow bars, you see that still most smokers, the most of smokers in New York, 54%, do have private insurance when you look at smokers as a total. But still, nearly a quarter of all smokers in New York have no medical insurance. Turning to the next slide, looking at quitting behaviors among these groups, you see some similar patterns. Quit attempts don't vary too dramatically, although they are higher among those with Medicare and Medicaid, and they're lower among those with no insurance or private insurance. But where you see more marked differences is in maintaining a quit attempt for 6 months or more. Among those with Medicaid insurance, only 11% were able to maintain a quit attempt for 6 months or more, even though 54% tried in the past year. So they're having trouble maintaining the quit attempts. And it's only 15% among those who have no insurance. For those with private insurance, it's 25%. And then Medicare, if you remember, the older age group, when we looked at smoking cessation by age, the group 65 and older was able to maintain their quit attempts for longer, so it's not surprising that the Medicare group shows similar results. And the last two groups we'll look at is smoking behaviors by mental health status and sexual orientation. So in this, what we did was in our survey, we had a question that was a very simple question assessing mental health problems in the last 30 days. And if people reported having mental health problems in the last 30 days, we categorized them accordingly, and we looked at the smoking prevalence among those two groups. And consistent with what the literature's found, those that have mental illness smoke at much higher rates, 37% here compared to 15% with no reported problems. And even though the prevalence of mental illness in the population is probably relatively low, you still have 20% of all smokers have reporting a mental health problem in the last 30 days. And turning to the next slide with cessation, even though, once again, quit attempts don't vary considerably in the past year, the ability to maintain a quit attempt does vary significantly. 25% among those with no reported mental health problems, and only 11% among those with mental health problems. And then finally, I'll look at smoking prevalence by sexual orientation. I won't present information on smoking cessation because our sample sizes were too small. And this slide shows that, consistent with the literature, although it's a pretty small literature, gay men and lesbian women and bisexual men and women smoke at higher rates than heterosexual men and women. There's a pretty large difference there. And I'll caveat this information in terms of the percentage of the smoking population that's heterosexual, gay, lesbian, or bisexual, is that in our survey, it's a telephone survey, we're asking people to report their sexual orientation. It's obviously a sensitive question. We have many people who refuse to answer that question, and there's probably significant underreporting of this question as well. So while the information on the prevalence of smoking is probably accurate, the proportion of people who report being gay, lesbian, or bisexual is probably underreported in this survey. So turning to the next slide, where we talk about the implications, there are significant differences across these demographic groups, both in terms of the prevalence of smoking and the ability to maintain a quit attempt. And the state has set a goal of reducing the number of smokers by 2010 by 900,000 fewer smokers. And some of these groups that have high smoking rates and, we noted, have difficulty maintaining a quit attempt are either educationally or socially disadvantaged groups that may be hard to reach and have their own unique barriers to smoking cessation. That said, there are a number of evidence-based strategies that can be applied, and I'll be talking about those next. Flipping ahead to the slide that says, what does the evidence say about promoting cessation? One of the good things about working in tobacco control is that there is a wide range of strategies that have been proven in controlled experiments to be effective and proven in more real-world settings to help people quit. Raising the price of tobacco is clearly associated with people quitting and smoking fewer cigarettes. Telephone quit lines are also very effective. We'll hear a bit later from Paula Celestino about characteristics of those who call the New York State Smokers Quit Line. Reducing clients' out-of-pocket costs for effective cessation therapies is also an effective way to promote cessation. In the healthcare setting, having provider reminder systems to prompt providers to talk to their patients about whether or not they smoke, and prompting smokers to make a quit attempt and provide other support, such as advice on how to quit and effective methods. Smoking bans in workplaces and other settings have been associated with lower smoking prevalence. Mass media campaigns, in particular in the context of other interventions like community interventions, have been shown to promote smoking cessation as well. So turning to the next slide to get into a little bit more detail for some of these effective strategies, looking at cigarette excise taxes and cigarette prices first. For every 10% increase in the price of cigarettes, the prevalence of smoking drops by about 2%. In addition, for every 10% increase in the price, people cut back on the number of cigarettes they smoke by about 2% on average. Some of you may know that in June, the price of cigarettes went up. In New York State, the tax on cigarettes per pack went up by $1.25. That's will be prompting smokers to quit this year. Unfortunately, there are, in New York State, opportunities for people to avoid the higher tax, which can mitigate the impact of the tax, like buying cheap cigarettes on Indian reservations or buying them online. But for the most part, even with those barriers, it's an effective strategy. The next line, we talk a little bit more about quit lines. There's a very strong evidence base for quit lines in general, and studies in New York State have shown that those who make use of the New York State Smokers Quit Line quit at higher rates than those that do not. In recent years, the Quit Line has made nicotine replacement therapy available, to get smokers started. There's a starter kit of NRT available, recent follow-up surveys of the quit line has shown that those who receive the NRT quit at higher rates than in previous years when that option wasn't available. So that's improving the success rate of those who call the quit line. Unfortunately, though, you know, despite the fact that it's evidence-based and those that call the quit line have been very satisfied with it in New York State, very high satisfaction rates. It's only used by a relatively small proportion of all smokers in the 3-5% range. And one way to increase the use of the quit line is to advertise it through television, radio, print, direct mail, having physicians refer smokers to the quit line, and even just advertising the availability of NRT, free NRT through the quit line has been shown to drive smokers to quit lines. So the next slide gives a little bit more detail. The New York Smokers Quit Line has a wide range of services. Smokers can call and talk to a counselor. They can call and get taped messages. There's a very extensive website with lots of information. As I noted, those that call the quit line are very satisfied. And use of the quit line has gone up steadily over time. As the budget for the program has expanded and as the media campaign has expanded and has been refined over time. The next slide shows awareness of the quit line, and this shows that, especially among smokers, from 2005 to 2006, awareness jumped from 56% to 66%, and more recent data shows that that awareness among smokers has gotten even higher. And then the next slide shows a pattern of call volume to the quit line, and you can see from its inception in 2000 to more recently, call volume has increased pretty dramatically, and this pattern has continued into 2008, where quarter one of 2008 was quite high, I think hit maybe record levels in one quarter. But the overall pattern is very encouraging that more and more smokers are making use of the quit line. The other thing that I mentioned is that the quit line also has a quit site with a range of information, and smokers recently can receive NRT by applying for it online. And because of that and increased promotion of the quit site, traffic to their website has gone up as well. This information presents data through 2007. You extend this through early 2008 and later into 2007, you see this pattern continuing with even more smokers and others visiting the quit site. So turning to the next topic, which is near and dear to most of your hearts, is the role of the healthcare provider in helping smoking cessation. There is a strong evidence base for reminder systems with and without provider education. In other words, establishment of electronic medical records that automatically prompt healthcare providers to discuss smoking cessation with their patients, or other reminder systems have been shown to increase the percentage of patients who are being asked about their smoking and encouraged to quit. I think that what's less well known is how to encourage healthcare systems to adopt reminder systems and to deliver provider education. I guess Annie can take credit and the others in the Cessation Center initiative for providing opportunities like this to provide provider education. And also, one of the things that's pretty novel that New York State is doing that other states are starting to follow is to establish cessation centers as a resource to help healthcare provider organizations with provider education as well as the establishment of reminder systems. So New York is at the forefront. The next slide shows some information about, you know, this is again from New York State, healthcare provider support for cessation. You can see on the top part of the slide that from 2003 to 2007, nearly 90% of smokers report that their provider asked them whether or not they use tobacco. A somewhat smaller percentage, 80% in 2007, were advised to quit by their provider. And then the next slide shows the proportion of smokers who indicated that their providers provided some kind of assistance with their smoking cessation effort. Now, this is increasing gradually over time. from 37% to 50% in 2007, but still remains relatively low. And these are things like giving, you know, very specific support for smoking cessation, referring them to the quit line, for example, and arranging other services. So that's an area that the state is trying to promote providers to do more. One thing that I don't have specific data on here, but is true from the literature, is that smokers do respond very well to providers giving them advice to quit. They are respected by smokers in terms of their advice and guidance. So that's part of why the reminder systems work, because as long as providers engage in those discussions, it does lead to greater cessation. Turning to another evidence-based strategy is tobacco counter-marketing. Many of you may have seen the ads that the New York State airs on television. The evidence base is definitely growing in this area. For the most part, the literature says that media on top of other interventions is effective. But just recently, the National Cancer Institute released a monograph, and one of those chapters focuses on assessing the effectiveness of mass media in discouraging smoking behavior. And that review shows that mass media alone can be effective in promoting smoking cessation as smokers become aware of, not only aware of the dangers of smoking, as most are aware of that, but the more recent ads, especially those ads done in New York State, are very emotional and show graphic images. And the idea behind that is to grab the attention of smokers and to give them reasons to make a quit attempt. Smokers tend to fall into two groups: those that have quit in the past, they've tried different strategies, and they're always looking for strategies. And they're the more susceptible group. And then there's those who are thinking about it, maybe haven't quit in a long time, or have never quit, and they need some provocation to start thinking more about that and making quit attempts. And New York State has definitely invested a lot of resources in television advertising, and their efforts have paid off. It's helped more smokers make a quit attempt, change their attitudes about tobacco, and it's moved smokers along that continuum of from not thinking about quitting all the way to quitting and trying to maintain a quit attempt. The next slide, I'll just make, there's a lot of data, but I'll just point out one central fact. These two figures have two different responses. One is the percentage of smokers who were presented various types of ads and were asked if they found the ads very powerful, somewhat powerful. And then the bottom half of that slide asks smokers when they saw the ad if it made them want to quit or make them want to smoke. And there was a range of a scale of 5 points where they could choose along that continuum. And I didn't want to present the actual advertisements because I thought people might have trouble downloading the large files. But I'll give you some example. There was an ad developed by New York City called Cigarettes Are Eating You Alive. And it was a very graphic advertisement that showed essentially internal organs and smoker breathing in smoke. And there was a voiceover that really was trying to prompt, grab the attention of smokers. And that's the kind of style of ad that, while it's not for everyone, especially not for non-smokers, maybe, it has been shown to be very effective in prompting smokers to call the quit line and to respond very positively. And despite those fairly harsh appeals, our data suggests that if you look in the top frame, 71% of smokers said that they found that advertisement powerful or somewhat powerful. And in contrast, we presented smokers an advertisement for nicotine replacement therapy from a major NRT brand, and that advertisement was much more low-key in just presenting information about nicotine replacement therapy. And obviously that is also targeted to somebody who's probably more ready to quit and prepared to quit, but I wanted to provide the contrast in terms of smokers' response to that, that the more graphic ad, like Cigarettes Are Eating You Alive, 41% said that prompted them to want to quit, whereas the information about nicotine replacement, it was only about 10%. Now, clearly, what New York does is they provide a mixture of ads, some that are more graphic and emotional to try to prompt smokers to quit, and other advertisements that are really aimed at those who are ready to quit and want solutions. And those are advertisements that focus on the benefits of, say, New York Smokers Quit Line. Okay, switching gears to smoking bans, I'll go through this quickly. New York State, as most of you know, smoking is banned in workplaces, restaurants, and bars. And the literature has shown that smoking bans not only reduce exposure to secondhand smoke, but reduce tobacco use. And that's been the experience in New York State. We've shown that it's reduced exposure to secondhand smoke, certainly, especially among bar and restaurant workers. And there's evidence that it's reducing tobacco use. One other thing that could be an opportunity for a discussion with smokers and healthcare providers is what they do about rules about smoking in their home. Especially families with children, they can protect their children from the dangers of exposure to secondhand smoke by not allowing smoking in their home, smoking outside, for example. So if the smoker can't quit, but they have children, they can benefit their family by smoking outside or not around their children. Exposure to secondhand smoke is associated with upper respiratory illness among children, asthma, and other illnesses, you know, lost days at school, et cetera. And also banning smoke in the home may prompt cessation, whether it's self-imposed by the smoker or their spouse. Going outside to smoke every time may make them question their habit more and make them more likely to quit. So the next slide shows the progress that New York State has made in promoting smoke-free homes from 2003 to 2006, and it shows that while among non-smokers, the prevalence of having smoke-free homes is really quite high at around 80%, and that's not changed much over the years. We're starting to see an increase among households with smokers, and there was a jump from 2005 at 28% up to about 39% in 2006. This morning I updated these data, and it shows also in 2007 that number has stayed around 38-39%. So there appears to be movement among households with smokers. Okay, now turning more of the reasons that smokers say they quit. But first, starting with the slide on the trends and making quit attempts, this is a slide labeled percentage of adult smokers who made a quit attempt in the past 12 months. Once again, this shows evidence that New York State is making progress in prompting more smokers to quit. There's a trend that's moving upward. In 2003, 46% of smokers reported making a quit attempt in the past 12 months, and that's now up to 60% in 2007. And then if you look at all smokers in 2007 adult tobacco survey, and you ask them about their interest in quitting, and 45% say a lot, and then 28% say somewhat. So over 70% of smokers are interested in quitting, but just may not know what to do. Looking at the next slide, you can see the different strategies used by current smokers in their quit attempts. And I've highlighted those strategies that are evidence-based and those that are not. A lot of smokers, 44%, say that they quit cold turkey or giving up all at once. The problem with that is that many of those will be back smoking shortly thereafter. But unfortunately, you see that those that are listed as evidence-based, using medication like nicotine patch or nicotine gum, which is 30%, which isn't bad, that's evidence-based. Using a stop smoking clinic or support group, getting counseling, calling a quit line are all around 5%, all evidence-based, but again, relatively low. And then 29% use some combination of other resources. So this is definitely an area that the program is trying to influence to get more smokers to use evidence-based strategies, and healthcare providers can play a role in that. The next slide gives the reasons that smokers say they have for trying to quit smoking. Central is clearly their concern for their own health and currently and in the future, at around 90 to 94%. The cost of cigarettes, and this was prior to the recent tax increase, was 50%. We might see that going up. But they're also concerned about the health or the effect it can have on others at 65%, setting an example for their children. But here, the last bar shows that 56% say that it was recommended by their healthcare professional. So that's one of the higher numbers. So given that there are all these evidence-based strategies and given the struggles that smokers have in quitting, where are things going from here? The recent tax increase will hopefully urge more smokers to quit. There are other policy changes going on in the state, but those often take years to really take hold. And the program is committed to continuing their mass media efforts to encourage smokers to quit. And they're, of course, trying to get more healthcare providers engaged in smoking cessation. There's a media campaign that the state, the cessation centers banded together to develop and disseminate. And that's, so far, our evidence shows that providers are aware of that and receive that campaign positively. And I think my own take is that probably more should be done in that area because there are a lot of providers across the state and it's hard to reach them effectively and in a cost-effective way, and a media campaign is one way to do that. And then, of course, the cessation centers will continue to try to encourage policy and practice changes in healthcare settings to get more reminder systems in place, more policies in place so that providers are prompted to discuss smoking cessation with their patients. So that's the end of my formal presentation. Next up is Paula Celestino, the director of the New York State Smokers Quit Line. And then after Paula speaks, we'll have time for questions and answers.
Thank you, Matthew. I have about 5 minutes here to talk a little bit about who comes to the quit line to receive our services. And I thought it would be interesting to compare some of the characteristics of the clients among those who call the quit line, obviously via the phone, or those who access our online service. I know Pat Bax has done a great job to educate folks about what the quit line does, but just as a brief refresher, folks call and they get coaching, cessation coaching, they get screened for a free nicotine replacement therapy, and then they get a follow-up call. Depending on their insurance status, they might get up to 4 follow-up calls. When someone accesses the Quitline service online, it's a screening application for the nicotine replacement therapy. So folks will come to our service online and apply for the free starter kit of nicotine replacement therapy, and we'll send that out to them. But we follow up with a phone call, so we do, attempt to call back those folks who come online. And when we call them back, they do get a level of cessation coaching as well. So they also have a one-on-one coaching. So I just wanted to clarify that for you as we move forward in talking about the characteristics of those folks. So we just kind of picked a date and time. Our quit line has been up and running for several years now, but we took the more recent data of the last 6 months to show you who's accessing our services and to compare the callers to the online clients. And if you move on to the first slide, we're looking at gender. And as you can see, females access the service online as well as calling us a little bit more than the males. But one of the things that we have noticed, which is good, is that we have a slight increase in males who are accessing the online service. And just to go back a little bit, the purpose of setting up the online service, there was a couple reasons. Even though it's 3 to 5% of smokers who we're reaching, it's still a tremendous amount of folks who we need to service. In order for us to service more people, we needed to provide other accesses for folks to get our service. So another way for us to broaden our reach was to provide online services. In addition to that, we hoped that perhaps we would find a little bit different demographic than those who traditionally called the quit line. And our quit line is no different than other quit lines in that we generally get somewhat of the older smoker who smokes a pack to a pack and a half a day. And we are seeing some differences, as you'll see here, with the folks who call us and the folks who come online. So the good news is the online online service is working for the purposes we set it up for. So as you can see, females are accessing our services a little bit more than males are, but we are seeing an increase in males on the online services. So if you move to the next slide, one of the differences that we see, which I think seems to be significant, is the educational level of folks. Those folks who are calling us tend to have a little bit less of educational years, if you will, and those who are accessing us online have a little bit more. So nearly 60% of the online clients who registered for the NRT had at least some college or were college graduates. In contrast, 54% of those who called the quit line, their highest education level was high school or lower. So we see some of the differences there. So I like to think that we are reaching a little bit broader base of the population. When we look at the ages, I think this kind of goes with some of the things that Matt was saying in terms of who's smoking. You can see on either end of the spectrum, we have, you know, lower levels of access to our service for the folks who are relatively young, and then lower access of service to those who are, you know, relatively older. And in the middle, we see really our clients coming in between the ages of, you know, 25 and 50. You know, 55. But again, you can look at the differences in how folks are accessing the service, and the good news is that some of the younger folks tend to be accessing the online services. So the highest percentage of clients who are utilizing the online registration is between 25 and 34, where we see the highest percentage of quitline callers are between 45 and 54. So we think that that's good news, too. On to the next slide. I went the wrong way. The next slide, we're talking about race a little bit. I think, again, as Matt pointed out, three-quarters of the smoking population is white, and I think that's a bit reflected in the numbers of white callers who access both online and our phone services. But I thought what was interesting about this is that although they're still small numbers, we are seeing a little bit higher of the Asian population of smokers using the online service. And that's great to see. Obviously, that's, you know, very low levels who are calling us, and we hope that that trend increases. But you can see here the different race backgrounds of folks who are accessing our services. So if we move to the next slide, we're talking about insurance status. And again, as Matt pointed out, that the majority of smokers in New York, you know, tend to be insured, although we have a lot of smokers who are uninsured as well. But as you can see, they're pretty much going toe-to-toe. Folks who are uninsured are both accessing the online services as well as the phone services, so that's good. But we are getting more insured folks online. And you can see that there is a big difference in the Medicaid population. So more folks are calling us who have Medicaid than they choose to go online. So that's a little bit about the insurance status. And then the last slide really just talks about the amount of cigarettes that people smoke to see if we can see some differences with the clients there. And what we see is that 26.2%, you know, of callers and about 16.8% of online clients smoked a little bit, you know, more than 29 cigarettes a day. And 73.8% of callers and 83.2% of online clients smoked less than 30 cigarettes a day. So those are just some of the differences that you see with our online clients versus our telephone clients. And I hope it gives you a little bit of an idea of who's accessing our service in general. So that is my five-minute presentation, and I am now going to turn it back over to Matthew.
Okay, I think this is the point in the talk. We'll open it up to questions and answers. The operator will manage that process based on first come, first serve basis, I believe.
Most definitely. If you have a question, you may press 0, then 1 on your telephone keypad. Our first question comes from Jane. Jane, your line is open. Jane, your line is open. Okay, We'll re-access that line later. Our next question comes from Pete Taylor. Pete, your line is open.
Dr. Farrelly?
Yes.
I'm living in Onondaga County. They just recently passed a law indicating they're going to raise the age to 19. Are you aware of any other counties in the state or elsewhere in the country where they've done that and what impact that would have on smoking rates?
I know that there's been increasing discussion about that, including some have raised that as a possibility for the federal regulations that are tied to FDA regulation of tobacco and raising the legal age of smoking. Because we haven't really experimented with the age in recent years, it's hard to know what impact that will have. I guess I would say I would liken it to an increase in the price of cigarettes because, you know, a 19-year-old, because of the law, if the law makes it inaccessible in that county, they could obviously go to another county to purchase cigarettes legally or get other friends of theirs to purchase for them. But that increases the hassle factor for them, and it may discourage them from smoking entirely. It might encourage them to smoke less. Based on what I know about these kinds of regulations, I wouldn't expect it to have a dramatic impact on the prevalence of smoking among that age group.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Dr. Abawa. Doctor, your line is open.
Yes, thank you very much for an excellent presentation. I have really been very impressed by the New York State Quitline, the resources that they're able to provide. I utilize that in providing information and motivating my patients to. I also utilize what I call a smoking cessation contract. And I talk with the patients so that they take it seriously to move them along the quit process, and for those who have just recently quit smoking, to let them realize that it's a chronic relapsing process, so it's not something that they're going to say they stop smoking, and that's a done deal. So thank you so very much for providing such excellent service, New York State Quitline.
Thank you very much for the recognition. We appreciate that.
Our next question comes from Eric McKinstry. Eric, your line is open.
Thank you. I actually have two quick questions. After the patient is referred to the quit line, how much follow-up do they actually get? Is it just the one phone call, or is there a continued follow-up after?
Well, we provide two sets of services. If the client is insured, they will be screened for nicotine replacement therapy, and if they're eligible, they'll be sent out a free starter kit. And we talk to them at that point about their quit process and provide them with a coaching session. And we then follow up those folks to see how they're doing in about 2 weeks' time, 10 days to 2 weeks, and talk about their quit process, coach them some more, and talk about the NRT they're taking. And that's pretty much what we do proactively for the insured. They are able to call us as many times as they would like. If folks are Medicaid or uninsured, they go through the same process. However, they are offered to be enrolled in our enhanced services. And if they're interested in that, we call them back and we rescreen them for another round of NRT. So they're sent their starter kit. We follow them up. We give them more coaching. We see if they're on track. If they're still eligible, we'll send them out more NRT. And then we'll provide them with up to 4 coaching calls if they're interested in that. So those are the two sets of services that we provide. But folks are able to access our services anytime they would like, and we do have a subset of clients who do call us on a regular basis.
Thanks. And my other question quick is, do you have any idea what percent of hospitals in the central New York area have a cessation program that is connected with the quit line, like referrals and whatnot?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but we do work with a tremendous amount of providers and clinics and hospitals who do refer to us through the Facts to Quit, and we have information about that program on our website, or you can contact the Quit Line for it. I'm sorry. We would like to see more, and it does grow, as all of our Quit Line services are. And the good news is we have our cessations out there, cessation center folks out there promoting the Quit Line and getting the health providers to do more partnering with the quit line. So we do have a lot, and I can get you the number, but it is a variety of hospitals, clinics, private practitioners, and social service agencies, all kinds of folks who send their folks to us for the facts to quit. We also provide cessation-related materials for those folks who would like to pass out that stuff in their office or set up a cessation class on their site. We have an online clinic, if you will, that the nuts and bolts of how to do that.
You're
welcome.
Okay, our next question comes from Ying Studebaker. Ying, your line is open.
Yes, I'm interested in knowing about the Asian quit line for Asian population. Is there an interpreter there also? And also the online clients today, is the online clients that have access to more language-specific type of services?
The first part of your question, when folks call us, we do have the ability to translate about 120 languages, and we do that. We contract with the service for that, so it's a three-way interpretation call. So when folks come to us online, we have the online information now available in Spanish and English. When we do call folks back, if they do need an interpreter, when we call them back after they've come to us online, we can use their translation service. But for right now, it is English and Spanish that we have available through the initial online service.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, I think we have time for just one more question, then we got to bring the call to a close.
Okay. Russ Sandra. Russ, your line is open.
Hi, thank you. Dr. Farrelly, you presented a lot of information on, demographic factors that are related to smoking, but of course there's a lot of interaction between many of these factors. For instance, I'm sure education is strongly related to insurance status and that type of thing. From your experience in looking at these numbers, what is the strongest social cultural factor impacting on smoking? Is it education?
I'd say it's education.
So anti-smoking messages should be targeting less educated.
Yeah, as you said, a lot of these things are correlated. In rural areas, you might have people with on average lower income and lower education, and that's part of why you see the smoking rates higher there. But I would definitely say that education is probably the strongest of the demographic factors that we looked at.
Okay. I think our time has run out for today's call. And on behalf of the New York State Cessation Center Collaborative, the New York State Department of Health's Tobacco Control Program, and the New York State Smokers Quit Line, we'd like to thank you, Dr. Farrelly and Ms. Celestino, for your presentation today to the New York State healthcare community. Those of you who need support or help, our cessation centers are sprinkled across New York State. The name and the phone number for each of the centers who cover your county is available on the website. Just download that, and if you need education, support, anything you need, they can really help you out to support your efforts in helping your patients to quit smoking. So please mark your calendars. Our next conference call will be on November 5th, and the title of that call will be Becoming a Tobacco-Free Healthcare Campus. And this brings us to the end of today's call. So thank you to all of you for participating, and have a good day.
Thank you for choosing a professional conference call. This conference has concluded.